This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Tributes today to the victims of the Boston Marathon bombing 2 years ago. Survivors and family members came together along Boylston Street at the sites where the two bombs exploded, where they killed three people and injured more than 260 others.
And just minutes ago, at 2:49 p.m., the precise time that the first of the two bombs detonated, church bells tolled, and the city came to a stop to observe a moment of silence. And Anthony, you were out on Boylston Street earlier today talking to some people about what they thought the significance of the day was. What did you hear?
Well, indeed. On the one hand, it sort of feels like a city that's moving on a long way from what happened 2 years ago. Along Boylston Street, there's traffic, lots of people coming and going in the course of a normal spring day. On the other hand, the viewing stands are up for next week's race, and you can't really escape the reminders of what happened 2 years ago. We saw a team of police officers conducting what looked like a security sweep. We encountered a group of people from the Boston Convention Center planting plants and flowers as a memorial to the victims of the bombing. And we also spoke to Dan Donahue. He's the general manager of the Lenox Hotel right there on Boylston Street, not far from the finish line. 2 years ago, a lot of the runners stayed there before the race. And Dan talked to us about how he feels about this day and about what he experienced on that day 2 years ago.
I thought the Jumbotron fell over. And then, you know, kind of ran out and saw that there was something down the street. And then, you know, moments later, the second bomb went off. And, you know, you think, you know, what's next? You know, what do you do? And, you know, that night marked the first time in 113 years then, actually, that somebody didn't sleep in this hotel.
First time in the entire history of the hotel.
Yes,
that
somebody
nobody
wasn't
slept here.
Nobody was in one of our beds. That kind of set the stage for the next 9 days, right? We got to see firsthand, very intimately, the first responders, Boston Police, do their work, and the resolve that they have was incredible.
This hotel, you, Dan, were very much in the middle of this awful event 2 years ago. What are you thinking today?
I'm thinking that Boston is resilient. You know, what two tried to inflict on us 2 years ago, they couldn't do it. They couldn't make it happen, and it's because of the resolve of, first of all, the first responders, and then Boston as a whole. I mean, in the days after the tragic events of 2 years ago, you've seen resilience like you've never seen in the whole country, right? And I think that only can be born out of people of Boston. Mm. You know, you always have in the back of your mind of 2 years ago, but it doesn't define us. We're excited. We just had a marathon meeting with all of our staff, and, you know, it's business as usual, and, you know, we're ready for another great marathon.
Well, of course, 2 years later, we think about the people who lost their lives, who suffered, who are still going through terrible, terrible pain. But, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot today. Do you think the day will come in this city when we're a few days out from the Boston Marathon that the marathon will just be the marathon? It'll just be a race again?
God, I hope not. I don't think so. There's people that can't move on, both physically because they passed or physically because of scars that were left. But at the end of the day, we have to. And we have to for their sake as much as, you know, ours, right? You know, those two cowards tried to take something from us. And the outcome of their attempt was the exact opposite of what happened, right? And they wanted to infuse hate and nothing farther from what actually happened. 2 years ago is the aftermath of, you know, what unfolded for the next couple months afterwards. I've met neighbors up and down the street that I've been here 8 years that I never met. And I think that those relationships today are still solid as they were 2 years ago. That day that the streets opened, that Tuesday after the second week of the marathon, there was people here from all parts of New England, you know, supporting.
Yeah.
Well,
I think we all are surprised by how the emotion can still overwhelm.
Well, you know, I'm emotional about the resilience of, you know, I'll never forget being on the street, actually, where we stood. And they first opened the streets, and then Mayor Menino was walking down the street, and literally as he was walking, they were opening. And the first customers came into Solace, And it was two guys that came in, literally ordered two Bud Lights, left a $100 bill in on the bar, said thank you and left.
Tell me what that told you.
Well, I think it speaks clearly to the fact that people wanted the city to heal, right? And they did that through a bartender that didn't work for the last 9 days, right? So it was their way of saying thanks.
And a nice expression of the way the city came together.
Yeah.
Well, Dan Donahue, General Manager of the Lenox Hotel, thank you for talking to us today, and good luck.
It was a pleasure. Thanks.
Amazing. Great piece, Anthony. A great conversation. I love that story about a $100 bill being one of the many ways it signifies people wanting the city to move on.
That's it. And there were so many of those stories, just little things that allowed people to say thank you, to move forward. And that was just one little story.
It's Dan Donahue that you spoke to at the Lenox Hotel. Let's turn now back to Boylston Street, where WBUR's Alex Ashlock is. He's been around the area all day, including just about 20 minutes ago when the city stopped for a moment of silence. Hello, Alex, once again.
Hi, Magda.
So what's been happening since the city did stop at 249 to observe that moment of silence?
Well, the crowd stayed around for a few minutes after the moment of silence. They watched hundreds of blue and yellow balloons float up into the air. They stayed for a few more minutes, but now the crowd has really cleared out. The area in front of the Marathon Sports Store, where the first bomb exploded 2 years ago today, is just now, I guess you could say, almost a normal sidewalk again, although there are people still standing here. I just want to pick up on something we just heard in that piece about all the little things that people did after the bombings. A man named Kevin Brown took it upon himself to curate all the memorial mementos that sort of piled up at various places around Boston after the bombings. They ended up in Copley Square. But he has brought today to this particular site four makeshift crosses for the three victims, the three people who were killed on the day of the Marathon bombing, Crystal Campbell, Lingzi Liu, and Martin Richard, and also Sean Collier, the MIT police officer who was killed in the shootout. And below it, a sign reads, "We will never forget them." And Kevin is obviously not doing that, but that's just another little thing that happened in the days and months after the bombings. Mm. And as we just heard, those little things continue to resonate here 2 years later.
And Alex, I understand that you may have just heard not so long ago Liz Norden, two of her sons were gravely wounded in the bombings. Is that right?
Her sons each lost a leg in the bombings, and they've been symbols of all the people, really, who lost limbs. I think more than 17 people lost limbs in the Boston Marathon bombings. And they're moving on with their lives, and Liz Norden was just telling us that she just feels it's amazing how the city came together after the events of April 2013, how they've supported her family, how they've supported her sons, and just an amazing thing to see the resiliency. She's out here with a lot of her family members representing the things that they're doing for charities and to try to move on from what happened to her two sons. A terrible thing that happened. They each lose a leg. But they're still alive, and they're still walking, in fact, on prosthetic limbs.
And finally, Alex, you know, in the spirit of looking forward, Monday is the marathon. You had mentioned to us a little bit earlier that you caught sight of Dave McGillivray there.
Yeah.
How is the Boston Athletic Association preparing for the big race?
I think they're well prepared, as they are every year. They will always tell you that the planning for the marathon doesn't just start the week before. It's a massive logistical undertaking to get 30,000 people out to Hopkinton, Massachusetts, and get them back into Boston. So security will be enhanced again this year, as it was last year, but the plans are in place for that. And I think right now it's just a matter of fine-tuning and getting ready for Monday, sort of the same thing runners are doing, just trying to make sure all the last-minute preparations are in place, all the things that need to be set up out in the Athletes Village in Hopkinton. But the BAA has been doing this for a long time. They know what they're doing. I think everything will be fine on race day Monday, Patriots Day.
WBUR's Alex Ashlock on Boylston Street. Thank you, Alex.
You're welcome, Magda.
And let's turn now to David Abel. He's a marathon runner and a reporter for the Boston Globe. He was at the finish line 2 years ago and saw firsthand what happened. He was filming a documentary that day following Julie Windsor, the first person with dwarfism to run in the Boston Marathon. That documentary is now out. It's called Undaunted, Chasing History at the Boston Marathon. And David, welcome back to Radio Boston. It's good to have you.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like to just start with you just by asking what you're thinking about on this day as a runner, as someone who was there a couple of years ago, and of course as a resident of Boston.
Well, again, I feel a great heaviness today and sadness, and I can't get out of my mind what so many people experienced that day. At the same time, 2 years later, the city has, I think, healed in a lot of ways, and it's hard to talk about that in a collective fashion because everyone suffers in an individual way, and there are still a lot of people suffering. But I think what Alex has described is a city that is preparing for a beautiful event that will attract hundreds of thousands of people and will hopefully be a joyous occasion while not forgetting what happened.
Mm. I wanted to ask you a little bit about your experience last year running in the marathon. You actually ran with Julie Windsor, who we mentioned, who you made the film about. And I know at one point you were actually at the front of the pack. How did that feel, given all the events leading up to that day?
So running the marathon last year was just an incredibly cathartic experience. But more than that, what we experienced running with Julie Windsor, who's 3'9" and a little spitfire and was hard for me to keep up with because she's such an amazing runner. She started at the beginning before the other waves went in the mobility impaired division, which starts before the elite athletes start. And because of that, and because of how fast she is, the two of us had this absolutely it was a fantastical experience. It was like, you know, every runner's dream. We were leading the Boston Marathon, or she was, and I was trying to keep up. And she had the crowds to herself for the first half of the marathon, which in any year would be remarkable. But last year, we were the first runners that most of the crowd saw up until about the halfway point of the marathon when the elite women caught up to us. And just to have the crowds cheering for Julie, really, I was just kind of tagging along. And It was just unlike anything you could imagine.
It's amazing. Yeah, it must have felt like you must have gotten a sense of what it's like to be winning the race, just briefly anyway.
Exactly. That's what it felt like. As we were running along, I started screaming, "Julie Windsor is winning the Boston Marathon," and the crowds would go crazy, and it was wonderful. And the elite athletes, as they finally caught up to her, were just cheering for her as well, and it was just a wonderful experience and you know, really reflected for us this powerful sense of redemption that I think we both felt when we finally made it to Boylston Street. In fact, Julie was stopped at mile 25.7 with some 5,000 other runners, and she turned to me just around the dip underneath the Mass Ave, the underpass beneath Massachusetts Avenue, and she just looked at me, and we hugged, and there was just this very powerful moment, and we both trudged on to the finish line, and we captured that, I hope, in the film to give people a sense of what it was like for, you know, one unique runner to really go overcome so much and so many of the fears that we all felt to make it back to Boylston Street.
All right. Well, that's David Abel. He's a reporter for the Boston Globe. His new documentary, Undaunted, Chasing History at the Boston Marathon, premiered last night on Discovery and will be showing this weekend at the JFK Library. David Abel, always good to have you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, as David Abel says, resilience, recovery, redemption, those are big themes of the day. They are also part of the story of Alvaro and Martha Galvis. They drove from their home in New Hampshire to Boston to watch the marathon 2 years ago. The couple's annual ritual began back in 1974, soon after they met, and they had expected to continue it into retirement.
But not anymore. The bombs that killed three people that day injured hundreds of others, including the Galvis. WBUR's Martha Biebinger has this story of their long, slow recovery.
Martha Galvis clenches her lips and narrows large brown eyes to focus on a tiny morsel of muffin that's on a table in front of her. She pushes it back and forth, then in circles, trying to close her thumb and middle finger around the crumb.
But I struggle until, you know, I try as much as I can. And if I do it, I am so happy. I'm so happy.
The 62-year-old former assistant preschool teacher from Nashua, New Hampshire, has physical therapy twice a week at Brigham and Women's Faulkner Hospital. She's learning to use a hand that doctors are still reconstructing after a pressure cooker bomb hurled nails and BBs into Galvis's left leg and the hand that reached down for a purse.
Because I don't know if you can still see the series all around here. My hand was destroyed. It was so bad.
I don't want to be too graphic about it, but it was really blown off.
Dr. George Dyer, a surgeon who specializes in hands at Brigham and Women's Hospital, started rebuilding Galvis's hand about 30 minutes after the bomb went off. Dyer decided he would try to save everything, except Galvis's ring finger.
She had a very beautiful wedding ring, a sort of an intricate ring that was two fine bands kind of wrapped around each other. And the force of a bomb going off right next to your hand, it's almost like a little miniature hurricane. It unwrapped these fine gold bands and then wrapped them together very tightly around her finger and just cut it off in place.
Dyer picked pieces of the wedding band out of bone and tissue and saved them for Galvis. Now, 16 surgeries later, she calls him a magician. He marvels at her grace and bravery. 17 marathon bombing patients lost parts of one or both legs. A few patients almost lost a hand. The deadly spray went out, not up, into the zone where survivors clapped, cheered, or held drinks. Galvis also severed nerves in her left leg and was in Spalding Rehabilitation Hospital for 2 months learning to walk again and regain limited use of her hand. 2 years of surgery and rehab are wearing Galvis down.
But then I'm thinking about when I was going to the marathon and I was cheering the people and I say, come on, keep going, 1 mile. So I look my hand and I say, come on, keep going, you can do it. This is like a marathon. And I can feel people in Boston say, yes, you can do it. Come on, keep going.
The jeweler in Downtown Crossing who made Galvis's wedding ring took the shattered, twisted pieces and molded a new one. But Martha Galvis, who is devoted to her husband, says that for a long time she was afraid to put it on.
It's silly, maybe, but just something happened and I can lose my hand again, the other hand.
For some marathon bombing survivors, the emotional and psychological scars are healing more slowly than the physical ones.
People tell me time heals, but it's a very slowly turning clock to me.
Alvaro Galvis, a 64-year-old health insurance salesman, was next to his wife when the bombs exploded. He had two surgeries to repair his leg. He says a 1-inch by 2.5-inch piece of pressure cooker removed from his right leg was introduced as evidence in the trial of now-convicted bomber Zhohar Tsarnaev.
How can someone do so much damage that you, at moments, have no control over your reactions? I don't know if we are wired as human beings to be able to deal with tragedies like this. I don't know if we will ever be able to. We're trying, but we keep trying.
Alvaro struggles with flashbacks. He's jittery and anxious. Alvaro can't get used to the feeling that he has no control over his surroundings.
You think about a lot of things, you know, 2 years of trying to understand the issue, and I think that's part of the healing.
Neither Alvaro nor Martha Galvis has been able to return to work since the bombings. They say they were getting better before the trial. Then Martha Galvis was at a dentist's office in the chair for a checkup last week when someone told her the jury had reached a verdict. She had to get up and leave.
I am so happy that...
There's a long pause while Galvis tries to slow her breathing and finish her sentence.
Justice is done, but there is no closure for us. There is never going to be closure because we have a big scar in our hearts.
So Martha Galvis prays.
I ask God, please, I don't know, in my heart, I don't want to hate him. I don't want to hate him because it's not good for me to feel that hate. And I ask God for him. But he has to be punished because he did horrible things. So he has to be punished.
Martha and Alvaro Galvis stop the interview. This is too much for them. Arm in arm, they leave Faulkner Hospital for the drive to their home in Nashua, New Hampshire, bracing for any news that might come on the radio, hurling them back to that moment 2 years ago they don't understand.
That's WBUR's Martha Biebinger.
Well, when we come back, as the city observes the second anniversary of the Boston Marathon bombing, the penalty phase in the trial of Jahar Tsarnaev begins next week. We'll talk to a juror in the Oklahoma City bombing case and how choosing the death penalty for Timothy McVeigh changed his life. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.